The British Bulldogs defend the Tag Team Championship against Hoss and Jimmy Jack Funk. The Giant John Studd and King Kong Bundy against the Machines. And on the line, the Intercontinental title. The Macho Man Randy Savage, accompanied by Elizabeth, against former Intercontinental Champion Pedro Morales.
Oh, yeah. My opportunity to show true 1,000% greatness, yeah, over everyone. Madison Square Garden, where Macho Madness has shined so many times before. But Pedro Morales, man, I'm after your reputation. All in one night. Yeah, in shape, yeah, I guess I am, yeah, no problem there, but let it fly, yeah, take a walk on the wild side, because you're a former world heavyweight champion recognized by the WWF, and your reputation will fall to the Macho Man Randy Savage. Oh, yeah, I can't be denied, yeah, anybody can say what they want, but nobody's better than the Macho Man Randy Savage, and that's a promise, yeah, in the garden, in Madison Square Garden, I'm going to be psyched up and sky high, yeah, no doubt about that.
Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of The Greatness of Randy Savage. Kelly Nelson here. Hope everyone's enjoying these so far. They'll drop every couple days. If one doesn't show up for a few days, don't be alarmed. I'll have another one ready eventually. Suddenly, I have a whole bunch of podcast projects going on, potential projects, and potential recordings, so who knows, my schedule is suddenly full, but ironically, WorldCast, my usual podcast, is not going to be one of them right now, because of just no time to record, unfortunately, but it'll be coming back soon, I promise you that. So, today we're going to be looking at Macho Man Randy Savage from 1986 in the WWF. So if you go from the main menu, go to chapters, and then go to next again, and we're going to be looking at January 18th, 1986, Macho Man Randy Savage versus Scott McGee. All right, we'll count down 3, 2, 1, go, and we will start. 3, 2, 1, go. Savage and Elizabeth. You can hear Pomp and Circumstance playing in the background. Like I said, this is January 18th, 1986. I'm not sure exactly where this is from, but it looks like a packed house. Oh, it's... Well, I don't know if it's Canada or not. You can see the Canadian flag hanging from the rafters, but that's common in American arenas too, so that doesn't mean we're in Canada. We got Gorilla Monsoon and Lord Alfred Hayes once again on commentary. And yeah, Savage. Another robe that doesn't, like when you look at it, you don't think that's like a common Macho Man Savage robe, or when you think of Randy Savage from this time, you don't think of that. I think that's maybe another holdover from his territory days, or he just was working through a few things and hadn't really found his style yet, so to speak, in the WWF. Otherwise, he's looking like the familiar Macho Man. Lots of stalling still at this point. Savage loved to do that. That was, you know, that's how a lot of heels worked for years and years, decades and decades. They loved to stall. So he's taking on Scott McGee, who was similar to Paul Roma at this time. Kind of a, you know, a good jobber, like I said about Paul Roma. Someone who would only lose to the pushed guys and would maybe pick up a win or two here and there against like pure jobbers or guys lower than him on the totem pole. He, you know, was a decent worker, had an all right body, but again, like Paul Roma, was too short to be taken too seriously at this time, and also didn't exactly have an abundance of charisma. But it's hard to say what he could have done with a push and maybe a bit of a gimmick or something. Anyway, this should be a solid match. There's a really good Scott McGee versus Terry Funk match from 1985 from Madison Square Garden that I saw a few years ago for the Place to Be podcast with JT and Scott. And so he's definitely capable. It's interesting to see some of the opponents Savage's faced so far outside of the regular TV, the Saturday TV jobber matches. Hasn't exactly, or we haven't seen him against really top tier guys yet, or mid card guys even. You know, he's taken on Tony Atlas, SD Jones, Scott McGee now. But they were taking their time with him in a lot of ways. But he'd already started a program with Hulk Hogan at Madison Square Garden by this point. Their first match was December 1985. Savage had also won the one and only Wrestling Classic tournament, an early foray by the WWF into pay-per-view, and that was in November 1985 from the Rosemont Horizon in Chicago, or just outside Chicago, probably. Nice back elbow there. Such snap to it, such stiffness. It looks so crisp. Patented knee with the hand clap. Joey Morella is your referee, wearing some snazzy Nikes. Definitely, those stick out. Savage taking things pretty slowly, though, here. Not sure what program this would have been from. One of the things that I've decided to do with this project is just go with the matches, you know, cold, and not do any research beforehand. Just take it as it comes, one match after the next. So I didn't look into this date at all beforehand, where it was taped. I haven't done any previous research at all, so I'm just going cold on each match, which is different than most of my podcasts, where I often do not a ton of research, but I always like to get the dates right, the arenas right, attendance numbers, if possible, other little tidbits here and there to fill in some details and some context. But for this project, I'm just going to watch the matches as they come on the DVD and not go ahead, look ahead, or do any research. Basically, like I would have done with Mystery Titans Theater, if you remember that, from a few years back with myself, Parv, and... Oh, a bucket of popcorn. Great, great healing here by Savage. That's another example of his territory leanings, where things were pretty wide open. He could do whatever he wanted to get heat, especially in a lot of the southern territories. I love that, because that's something you wouldn't see that kind of improv later on. And it's great in the WWF, I mean, and it's great to see McGee turn the tables on him. But anyway, yes, like Mystery Titans Theater years ago, we would just, you know, grab cards at random and watch them, not even knowing what match was going to come up next on the card. I may have looked ahead a few times for some of the cards we did, but I remember most of the time we just started the video on YouTube, and just, yeah, didn't even know what was the first match or the next match. Or the main event, or who was on the card at all. So that was partly why we called it Mystery Titans Theater, because it was a mystery card. So this is a similar concept, a mystery DVD, as far as what to expect. I don't know how many matches I'll have seen beforehand. Look at this. Scott McGee with a small package. He's getting a lot of hoop spots and offense here, but that I think is the beginning of the end with that clothesline to the top. And a big elbow smash. 1, 2, 3. That was a decent little match. Yeah, that was worked really well, actually. You know, sub 5 minutes, I would say, with some good hope spots by McGee. The popcorn spot, improv, popcorn spot. Savage being a dick, of course. Yeah, McGee held up his own. Held his own for sure. So that, yeah, I would say that's maybe the best match we've seen so far. Not that there's been a lot of competition or the bar has been set very high. But yeah, I think that was a perfectly fine little match. Macho working a little side angle with Gorilla Monsoon. Okay, well, this is a familiar arena for sure, Madison Square Garden. Randy Savage against Pedro Morales. We've skipped ahead quite a bit now. We're now into August. August 25th, 1986, I believe. The previous match was January, so we skipped ahead quite a few months. Surprised they didn't have anything with Macho Man and Tito Santana from earlier 1986. Maybe a match, one of the matches that's not as well known between the two of them. That would have been great. Because now Macho Man is the Intercontinental Champion. He won that in February at Boston Garden against Tito Santana. And yeah, now we're seeing like prime Macho here. Look at this. Took a swing at one of the fans coming down the aisle. Nice looking robe. Getting more to the robe style that we'd be familiar with for Macho Man at this time. Elizabeth in that black number is looking particularly beautiful tonight. I've seen this match before. I mean, this is definitely not a match that's been hidden in the archives. It's probably, I guess, yes, never been on a WWE DVD before. But of course, back in the 80s, if you lived in the area, the New York area, you could have seen this on the Madison Square Garden MSG network, which broadcast whole cards every month or every show pretty much by that time that they ran at MSG. This would have been in circulation in tape trading circles, of course. And I believe this is another match that I reviewed with Scott and JT, or JR as he's more commonly known on the Place to Be podcast, on that show when I was doing reviews with them. Pedro, of course, a former, well, Triple Crown champion at this point in WWF history, the only Triple Crown champion. He was the WWF champion in the early 70s for almost 3 years. He was the Intercontinental champion multiple times, including a second reign that lasted over a year and was actually the record-setting reign for the Intercontinental title until Honky Tonk Man's reign in 87-88. And then he completed the trifecta. Or actually, no, the second title he would have won was the tag team titles, because that was in August of 1980 at Shea Stadium at the last showdown at Shea, where he teamed with Bob Backlund to defeat the Wild Samoans. And then immediately they were stripped of the titles because it was ruled Backlund couldn't hold two titles at the same time, which, putting on my kayfabe hat, a term that Peter Winson uses, it made no sense then. Why was the match even signed if as a title match, if they knew going ahead that if Backlund and Morales won, they wouldn't be able to hold both belts? But that kind of logic is usually not considered too often in wrestling, even back in the early 80s or the territory years when things were they were a bit more careful and with the logic. So yeah, and then Pedro won the Intercontinental title for the first time in December 1980, so that would have been when he completed the trifecta and was the first Triple Crown champion. At this point, he had come back in 85 after being gone for a couple of years and was used a lot in the old Northeast cities where he was very popular, especially New York. And in New York in the 70s and early 80s, he was a huge, huge star with the large Puerto Rican fan base that would come to the shows at MSG. So this made sense as an attraction at Madison Square Garden at this time to see Pedro challenge for the Intercontinental title, even though on TV he wasn't being pushed really at the time and wasn't used outside of the Northeast, wasn't used as an attraction or a star really. But for New York, this was, for longtime fans, this would have been a cool match to see Pedro if he could win the Intercontinental title for a third time. And the crowd's hot, for sure. Savage, though, by this point, he'd been in the territory in New York for over a year and was very over. Very over as a heel, but also had a lot of fans that were into heels. Macho Man was one of the favorites for a lot of fans. I remember when I first got into wrestling, I knew a family. It was a family of, I think there was five of them in total, and they were all boys. And the one I became friends with, his name's Matt, he was a year younger than me, but he was a huge wrestling fan, and all his brothers were big wrestling fans too, and this was 1986, and he had older brothers that were teenagers. And I remember one, I think it was the oldest brother, who coincidentally was named Randy. He loved Randy Savage, and he was about 13, 14 years old at the time, and I was around 9 years old. And yeah, he was sort of like that stereotypical heel fan. You know, by the time I was 13, 14, I loved the heels too. But yeah, Randy was a huge fan of Randy Savage. But yeah, you can understand. Savage never lost, had a great look, and he immediately, when he did turn babyface in 1987, became, next to Hogan, the most popular man in the WWF and probably maybe the most popular man in all of wrestling. Second most popular man in all of wrestling. When Macho was WWF champion in 1988, he was my favorite wrestler. I was so into him. The first WWF show I went to was January 1989, and the main event was Savage against Bad News Brown for the WWF title. This was in Calgary, of course. And my dad bought me a Macho Man foam finger that I cherished from that. And then my heart was broken a month later when Savage turned heel and the Mega Powers exploded. And, you know, at that time that's some great selling by Savage. Great stuff. At the time I was 11 years old and I was still a bit too young to be a heel fan. And I really loved Savage, but I remember kind of feeling like, you know, Savage should have been the one to stay the good guy, as I would have called them back then, and have Hogan turn heel. And I actually lost interest in wrestling after WrestleMania 5, and a big part of it was because Savage is now pushed as a heel, and he was no longer the WWF champion. And, you know, when you're that age, you care about certain things like that. And I lost interest in wrestling for the better part of 2 years. Beginning right after WrestleMania 5, or in the summer of 89. So Pedro dominating so far. Well, here's his signature Pedro spot, the roll-up sunset flip out of the corner. He would often win matches that way when he was the Intercontinental Champion in the early 80s. Yeah, could see that small package coming a mile away. Pedro was showing his age at this point, though, definitely. Another Near fall coming for Pedro, backslide. That was a spot Macho loved as a heel, is to have his opponent backslide him for a near fall. Savage definitely doing his damnedest to make Pedro look like $1 million for his most faithful fans. Look at that guy in the front row with the yellow tracksuit. Wonder what his story was. Oh, here we go. Chairs getting involved. Someone's coat is wrapped around it. Oh. Pedro said, nope, I'm not taking no chair shots. Pedro, a holdover from the, oh goodness, from the 70s, where a lot of guys in New York were famous for not wanting to bump a lot. And yes, Pedro is so revered still in New York and protected in New York that he won this match by countout against the Intercontinental Champion in 1986, when Savage wasn't losing too many matches, even by countout or disqualification. And they, I'm pretty sure, yes, I'm almost 100% sure they never did a return match for this. Because you would think, well, Pedro won the match by countout, you should have a rematch, maybe a lumberjack match or something. But that was Pedro. Pedro was protected that way in the 70s, you know, famously, where he would never lose a match, even by countout or disqualification in New York, especially in New York, for fear of the Puerto Rican fans rioting. Some of that's probably exaggerated, but he was protected unbelievably. All right, we're going to stop it right there. Those were two longer matches, and we're up to about 20-plus minutes, and I wanted to keep these as short as possible. So next time we'll resume with one more match from 1986, and then we'll be diving into 1987. Thank you for listening, and take care.